I'm not going home. I'm moving forward with my life, or I am, once you move out of my way. Connor didn't budge. She stepped forward, stubborn and furious, her chest a mere hair's breadth from his. Move now. He moved, his fury pushing him forward. He wrapped his arms around her and pulled her to him, smothering her protest with a kiss. He kissed her with every bit of hurt he felt, every bit of the anger that simmered through him, every bit of deep longing he felt every time he remembered that she'd chosen another man over him. I want her with every ounce of my soul. For a second she stayed frozen, but when he deepened the kiss, she melted against him with a suddenness that sent his senses reeling. Her arms slipped around his neck, and she pressed herself to him, moaning softly as she opened her mouth to him. The kiss deepened further, their breaths mingling, their bodies straining against one another. Her perfume filled his senses until he was drunk with it. The room disappeared, their anger burned away by the fury of passion. His hands slid up her back and then down, cupping her perfect bottom, wanting her so badly he burned with it. Her hands tangled in his lapels to hold him closer as her tongue brushed his, sending a wild flame through him, driving him into a wave of lust so strong he thought he would drown. God, he wanted this woman, desired her, needed her. He lifted her off her feet, and Thea shivered, her hands twining about his neck. Her full breasts were pressed to his chest. Declan Ramsay sauntered into the bedroom, carrying two mugs of tea. One mug with the text, "I'm his," emblazoned, and "he's mine," on the other. The mugs are one of Sam's many silly Christmas purchases, along with his and mine towels, t-shirts, and of course underwear. Declan had initially been annoyed with himself at how adorable he found the saccharine sentiment. However, he'd grown to enjoy using the mugs for their morning cuppa. He handed a mug to Sam and sat down on the bed beside him, sipping from his own. "Well, has he been in touch?" "Nope, not a peep," Sam said. "Not one email from James in any of my accounts." He absently scrolled on his computer tablet, sipped his tea, and then put the mug on the nightstand. "Really, there's no need to fret. To be honest, I actually think we should just be grateful and enjoy a rare period of peace and quiet." "But you know, think it's a wee bit suspicious?" Sam laughed mirthlessly. "Not at all. James is a spy to his bones. Everything he does is suspicious. I'm well used to my father's disappearances. He did the same trick all through my childhood," he said, an icy edge to his voice. "I lost count of the times Belle and I would say goodnight, Daddy, tootle up to bed and then find Mum in one of our beds in the morning because he'd vanished during the night. She always hated sleeping alone," Sam said wistfully. He paused for a moment, lost in nostalgia. "Anyway, you can be damn sure he'll be in contact when he wants something." Sam sighed out. "God, my poor Mum must have really loved the bastard. I just don't think I could be with a man who disappeared like that." Declan coughed. Sam saw Declan's sarcastic, narrow glare out of the corner of his eye and bit his lip. "I did it once, okay? I'm not going to turn into my father, if that's what you're thinking," Sam protested. "Thanks for the reassurance, darling," Declan said dryly, as he leaned in for a kiss, still privately amused by Sam's protestation. "Downsizing can require you to shrink a house full of possessions, so they'll fit into a new space that can be much smaller than what you have now. Many of these possessions are things you really, really like. They're probably things you couldn't possibly live without. To make the mission even more challenging, you're likely working on an uncomfortably tight deadline. Sound familiar? Or maybe you're facing another common type of downsizing scenario. The task of wading through a lifetime of items that belonged to someone else, like your parents, grandparents, or other loved ones. Their home contains stuff that might be important to you, but you probably have even less time to manage this kind of downsizing. Sound familiar? While standing on the brink of a downsizing project, you might be terrified that you'll make a bad decision, throw out the wrong thing, alienate your family, infuriate your parents, or just disappear into an abyss of clutter and never be seen or heard from again. Sound familiar? It does to me. The challenge of downsizing the possessions in a home, whether their own or someone else's, petrifies most people. I know this well because I've helped thousands deal with clutter in their homes. Thousands more have asked for guidance on what to keep and what to let go while moving or downsizing. I've also had to downsize under trying circumstances that faced my own family. My mother cared for my father for years during his long illness. 4 years after he passed away, her failing health brought her to an assisted living facility. Old age and steadily advancing dementia made her last few years difficult, and then, hard as it was to believe, she was gone too. My younger sister, Julia... It was the second hour, and Kelton Poison Dagger was at the same place where he'd originally met the vampire. Kelton's wand was in hand, but he had not cast a spell to provide light. His father had given him strict instructions to draw as little attention as possible. He stood in near, total darkness, waiting for the possible arrival of a murderous creature. The thought he might be betrayed and murdered filled his mind. Killing a poison dagger under such circumstances was most definitely something Lilith would do. "I take it your father has agreed to my offer?" The voice from behind made him jump. Not 5 feet away was Enver. Even being so close, it was hard to make out more than an outline in the darkness. The vampire's fangs were the only part of him Kelton could see clearly. "Where have you been? I came here yesterday and waited for over an hour." "My apologies." Enver sketched a shallow bow. "You can inform Master Dante. My mistress was awake late last night. Obviously, I could not venture out without her being aware of it. I'm watched, even when I'm not watched. Such is the fate of a familiar." Kelton had no idea if it was a lie. "My father is willing to meet you, but he remains suspicious." "Hardly surprising. Your father hasn't lived this long by being the trusting sort. He wanted me to inform you he will use a circle of truth. He plans to interrogate you thoroughly, and if he suspects any sort of deceit, we'll kill you. He and I will be within a protective circle." "It is to be expected. You poison daggers are not known for your courage." Danny glared at him a moment, too furious to speak. He dropped his bag and coat on the floor. "Are you a spirit or a child?" he demanded at last. "I asked you not to do this anymore, and then you turn around and make the town suffer because you don't get to have your way." Kelton looked away, but not from guilt. Instead, he looked self-justified. "You don't know what it's like here. What, to be alone and have no one give a damn?" Kelton closed his eyes. "I understand, Kelton. I don't think you realize how much I understand." Danny ran trembling hands through his hair. "But that's not the point. Do you realize what happens to the town if you're not working? If the town stops, then it's all over. Everyone will be trapped here, cut off forever. And it'll be your fault." "Your fault." "I don't want the town to be cut off forever," Kelton said. "Then why did you do this?" The silence lasted so long, Danny almost thought the spirit wouldn't answer. "You didn't come," Kelton said at last, his voice almost too low to hear, like the scraping of old gears. "Why? You said you would." Danny leaned back on his heels. When he didn't say anything, Kelton went on. "I waited. You said you'd come back, but you never did."